Hi, I'm Ben Rizzuto, wealth strategist at Janus Henderson Investors. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
Before we get started, we're going to be asking you a question at the top of every show for the next few weeks. We want to know more about you, what you like about the show, and what else we could be doing to help you take on the week. Our question this week is, what do you like most about the show? That's it. We're keeping it pretty open-ended this time. If you're listening on Spotify, look for our poll under the episode description, or you can send us an email at takeontheweek@wsj.com. Now, on to the show. What's good, everybody? I'm Dion Reboen for The Wall Street Journal, and this is WSJ's Take on the Week, the show where we break down the most important things to watch in business and financial news. We cut through the noise to get you ready for what matters. The latest earnings season is coming to a close. So what have investors learned about U.S. companies and the economy? And how real is the AI trend that has already helped power the S&P 500 to more than 20 record highs this year? Gabriela Santos from J.P. Morgan Asset Management joins us to break down her big takeaways from the latest earnings season. We'll also look ahead to the upcoming quarter's reports and talk about what to look for to find out whether the AI story is a phenomenon or a flash in the pan. And Gabriela will explain why she's starting to get a little worried about U.S. consumers. We are also on the precipice of a new month, and that means it's jobs report week. We've got LinkedIn chief economist Karen Kimbrough to talk us through this week's report. And since Karen has access to all of LinkedIn's data on what companies are posting, what jobs people are applying for, and the way its 200 million plus members in the U.S. are looking for work and workers, she's got some great insights on what's happening underneath the surface of the labor market. And finally, we've got an exclusive advanced look at a new survey from Santander Bank that is showing some truly unfortunate trends for savers. I'll talk with the company's U.S. president and CEO about what he's seen and why Americans have been missing the boat when it comes to savings. But first, let's talk earnings. We are at the tail end of the last quarterly reports of 2023 and just a couple weeks away from getting the first reports on the start of 2024. To talk about what we've learned and to provide some answers to the burning questions we've got ahead of the next round of earnings, I'm joined by J.P. Morgan Asset Management's Chief Market Strategist for the Americas, Gabriela Santos. So, Gabby, we've just finished with the fourth quarter's earnings reports. Nearly 100% of companies have reported. How would you summarize the earnings we saw from S&P 500 companies to wrap up the year?
We would say they were better than expected and the beginning of an upward trend for earnings. So for this year, our expectation really is for a continuation of those strong hypercap tech earnings, although the bar is quite high.
That is a high bar.
Very high bar now. Yeah. Plus, as the year goes on, quarter by quarter, actually even more of a recovery in the earnings of the other 493 companies. And by the fourth quarter, we should actually see that group have higher earnings year over year than the Magnificent Seven.
Yeah, the Magnificent Seven being those seven big tech companies that really pushed the market higher last year. You know, we heard a lot about artificial intelligence during this earnings season. Based on what you've seen in these reports and on these calls, how much of this is companies really saying, all right, we're doing something with AI that's going to move the needle. We're investing, we're putting AI to work here. And how much of this is companies like, yeah, no, AI, that's great. We're doing something about that for
sure. We're doing it. I think as always with these things, you do have to be somewhat careful if there's just a mention of it without anything to actually back it up. That, you know, you start to see certain speculative trades from that kind of behavior, like you did with blockchain and cryptocurrency, and even further back with just the word .com.
Right.
But no, we do think companies, for the most part, are legitimately doing a lot with AI. And you can think about it two ways, I think. The first is just the companies that are at the forefront and are actually monetizing AI. So selling ads at a higher price because AI helps you to target those ads more, for example. And I think what you'll see this year is actually more companies monetize artificial intelligence, different semiconductor companies, but software companies, companies that provide cybersecurity protection, any company really with a lot of data. So I do think there's meat behind that. The other angle of this, I think, is fundamentally every single company needs to not just be talking about it, but doing something with it.
Yeah.
Right? And we see it in our business, in financials, we see it in healthcare, industrials. There's a lot that can be done to automate road tasks, improve productivity. So I think going forward, it's yes, who's mentioning it, who's monetizing it, but also who's not. That's going to really leave these kind of companies less competitive, leave them behind if they're not.
For companies other than, you know, the NVIDIAs, the Microsofts, the world who really have seen that hockey stick growth, how real is this AI thing?
Some companies, the early leaders, have been investing on it and have actually been monetizing it for a little bit of time. And now I think it's that arms race of other companies really investing in it. But even for us, not just when we think about security selection or earnings, but even us as macroeconomists, we do think this is a truly fundamental turning point for the economy as a whole, for the kind of upside risk it can bring to productivity, kind of something similar to what we saw in the early 2000s with really the advent of desktops and the internet. So I think when it comes to the AI cohort, really the bar, as we know, is quite high. So it's not enough just to deliver pretty good earnings or even great earnings. You've got to deliver above and beyond to truly prove that actually there's more to the story than has already been priced in. So not every company is going to be able to beat that. And that's why we continue believing in this dispersion within that theme of the companies that do or don't meet that very elevated bar. The other thing we'll be watching is what happens with revenues. I think everyone's flagged this risk of margin contraction last year, is aware of some of these cost pressures. But what we'll be watching is especially what happens with revenues, because we do have a positive view on the macro economy, but there's still a certain step down in nominal growth. So which companies can still maintain pretty steady revenues versus which ones start to feel the punch from either a volume or a price angle.
Okay, that's another thing too. I've seen a lot of negative guidance for this quarter. Ahead of earnings season, companies guide investors. They say, hey, we think things will be a little bit better or a little bit worse than you're expecting. And this upcoming quarter, about 70% of companies are issuing negative guidance, saying they think things will be worse. How worried do you think investors should be about that, especially in an environment like we've got right now?
I think it depends on which pocket of the market. I do think we're still somewhat wary of certain companies and type of companies, even though at a surface level, macro level, broad index level, we have an optimistic view. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of negative guidance we've been hearing especially has had to do with consumer-related companies.
Yeah.
And one of the big reasons behind the step down in the pace of growth is a step down in the pace of consumption. Very clearly, when you look at middle income and below for consumers, more and more there's a focus on value, on discounts, on basic consumption needs.
What's the biggest risk investors are facing looking ahead to the start of this next earnings report? Is there a particular sector or area of the market where you're particularly worried about investors being disappointed by some earnings reports?
I would answer that two ways. The first, just in terms of the earnings report as a whole, we would continue to flag these issues around the consumer. I do think sometimes when you have just overall very strong top line economic growth helped by a resilient consumer, we can miss the normalization that's happening in those consumer patterns. And it's all about the direction of travel. And sometimes we can miss exactly how much that's decelerating. So we would keep a keen eye on the consumer. And then the other one is certain pockets of financials. We would still keep very much a clear distinction and a close eye between your systemically important financial institutions or your very large banks versus your regional banks. My worry is not so much on the margin side, because we do feel like overall those margin pressures are behind us and companies have really, quote unquote, right-sized, which was a big buzzword.
In addition to AI.
It's more on the revenue side. We don't think just about sectors within the market. We also think about factors. And the quality factor is a very, very important one for this year. Positive macro view, positive earnings view at the surface. But you can improve upon that by overlaying a quality factor, because that takes into account which companies over time have proven to have stable revenue and stable earnings growth in different types of economic environments.
That was Gabriela Santos, Chief Market Strategist for the Americas at J.P. Morgan Asset Management. Given the way the so-called Magnificent Seven has performed this year, though, Gabby and I both thought it was time for a new nickname.
Anecdotally speaking,
of course,
you have Tesla and Apple down double digits now. You've got Alphabet kind of underperforming the index a little bit. And then you've had very, very strong performance in the other four in the group, delivering pretty solid returns. So I would say, like, Magnificent Four, one, not great two.
The Fantastic Four?
I don't know.
Can we coin that right here, right now, today?
Some people are saying Fantastic Four, maybe Fabulous Five. We feel more strongly about four
Seven. So Fantastic Four, you heard it here first
on
Take on the Week. When we come back, I'll be talking to LinkedIn's chief economist about how she is already seeing AI change the way workers look for jobs and the way companies look for workers.
The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
I got a chance to chat with LinkedIn chief economist Karen Kimbrough last year at the company's New York offices. During our conversation, she talked about the way she was seeing the labor market change and
the Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
Role that AI was playing in that. As we look ahead to this week's jobs report, it seemed like a perfect time to revisit that conversation and talk to Karen about what's happening with jobs and the growing importance of AI for many U.S. employers and job seekers. Karen, you and I talked in October, and you told me that you were seeing in LinkedIn's data a market that had flipped. And you were saying that we were starting to see a shift from this very tight labor market to one that's a bit looser, and that job seekers, rather than employers, were having to compete. Where are we now?
Yes, we are seeing employers, I would say, dramatically slowing the pace of hiring since the peak in, say, the spring of 2022. So 2 years ago, there was sort of a very frenzied competition amongst employers for talent. It's been softening ever since. Employers are still hiring. They're just not hiring as aggressively. And the biggest contraction seemed to be particularly in the tech sector a year or two ago. That's actually, interestingly, that has now changed a little bit. We're seeing hiring growth actually net positive in the tech sector now. And we also see like a lot of hiring that's picking up in the construction space and in consumer services. Healthcare continues to be robust. So there's definitely places where hiring by employers is either holding pace or accelerating a little bit. But that's only one half of the story, right? That's the employers looking for labor. The supply story is one where we're starting to see an increase in job seekers who are maybe searching with more intensity. The very intentional job seekers are becoming more intentional. What I think is going to happen is you're going to see a labor market, like every labor market, it's not told by one story, but by multiple stories. So what's happening in the tech sector is largely a function of the AI boom that's happening. There's a lot of demand for AI talent. So the hiring is coming back, but it's coming back for a specific type of talent. So there's a lot of different stories to be told in the labor market, and it really depends a little bit on the industry and their sensitivity to the rate environment.
So you mentioned AI, and that's been a very hot buzzword for investors recently. You've also recently talked about that impact of AI on employment. How are you seeing the effect of AI in the jobs report already?
So I'll probably give you a better answer if I talk about how I see AI in our data. I think if you look in the jobs report data, if you're seeing an improvement in tech hiring, which is what we see in our data, a lot of that has to do with the hunt for talent that we consider AI expertise. That's a very small proportion of the workforce, but it is in high demand right now because of the interest in this as, you know, basically a new thing spreading across our economy and the global economy. You know, there's been a 21 times increase in job postings on our platform looking for AI talent.
Wow.
So that's a lot. 21 times is a lot. And that's only since November of 2022. And then there's the element of people who are actually saying, I'm going to retrain myself slightly from being a programmer to maybe learning how to train large language models and have some true AI expertise. And so there's different elements of learning happening, but we're seeing it across our platform with these massive increases in people adding skills and engaging in learning courses. And so that, to me, tells me that this is definitely something where a lot of people see the opportunity and are moving towards it in the labor market.
Do you feel like we'll start to see that in the non-farm payrolls report, in the government jobs data?
I think it's going to take some time. I do think this is a real event. It's not a hype cycle. There might be some hype to it, but it's a real event. This is going to change how we work. This is going to change how we collaborate with people, how we spend our time. But it's going to take a while for this to show up. I don't think that's going to show up in 5 months from now in non-farm payrolls. I would be expecting to see the real trend show up, you know, maybe a year from now and beyond. So for us, we think that it's probably going to continue to be one where you see momentum in the tech sector. I think that's going to continue. And that's partly because the tech sector is healing from a really, really dramatic contraction in the past couple of years. I think we're going to also see continued hiring in healthcare, because that one has been one that's just been sort of nonstop since the pandemic. And I think that there's very little to change that trend given the demographics that we see in our country. And then I think that there's a lot of energy in manufacturing and in construction, in part because there's been a lot of investment in making our economy more green, making it more resilient from an energy perspective, building new plants for chip makers and so forth. All of that is sort of happening under the maybe the radar, but that's going to continue. So I actually think that the labor market will continue to be strong. I just don't think that it's going to run at this level indefinitely. And I think eventually we'll see some softening in non-farm payrolls.
That was LinkedIn chief economist Karen Kimbrough. Up next, I'll be talking to Santander U.S. President and CEO Tim Winnes about why a majority of middle-income Americans aren't taking advantage of the highest interest rates in a generation. I can't believe y'all aren't getting this free money. One more thing before we get out of here. I want to talk about interest. Specifically, all the interest some of you are not getting because you haven't upgraded your savings account. The average U.S. savings account is paying less than 0.5% interest. And savings accounts at some of the nation's largest banks, like JPMorgan Chase and Bank of America, are still offering 0.01% interest on their standard savings accounts. I have been pounding the table on this issue for years. Back in 2022, I wrote a story that showed Americans had missed out on $42 billion of interest payments in just the second quarter of that year. The total jumped to at least $603 billion when I tracked it from then to the start of 2014. A new report from Santander Bank that will be released on Tuesday shows that most of y'all are still missing the free money train. The survey of middle-income Americans, those earning $50,000 to $148,000 a year, found that 6 in 10 have not moved money to earn higher rates on their savings since interest rates began to rise back in 2021. So I got on the line with Tim Wenis, president and CEO of Santander US, to talk about what's going on.
I think the perception is that it's complicated and a lot of work. And I've got to figure out, I got to go down to the bank and it's going to take a long time. Two-thirds of the people said that they would go do this if they could open up an account in less than 10 minutes. But 75% of them feel like it's going to take longer than that. And that probably is historically true when they've had an experience opening up a new account with a financial institution.
That makes some sense. But based on the survey, half of middle-income Americans are keeping at least $5,000 in their savings. So the difference between a 0.01% rate and a rate above 5% that many banks are still offering is hundreds of dollars a year. I asked Tim if people don't know how much more money they could be getting or if they just don't think it's worth it to switch.
I think that there's some inertia, right? That people are comfortable with what they have and they're uncertain when it comes to their finances. And so they're not sure, they don't want to go into a situation where they're going to ask questions or be embarrassed or maybe not qualify for something. And some of that is on the banks, right? Us being one. How do we make it easier for consumers to do business with us? And that's why kind of our mantra and mission, we talk about being simple, personal, and fair. And I think that's really, if consumers believed that their financial services provider was those things, they would be more apt to ask the questions or to come inquire and to do more with us.
The Federal Reserve is expected to cut interest rates this year, but with inflation remaining above their target, it could be a while. And the Fed holding rates at these high levels is a big reason banks are offering such high rates for savers. So this week, you should look out for Santander's full survey to get a bit more information on what consumers are doing with their money, where pent-up demand is, and how middle-income Americans are feeling about the economy, inflation, and the likelihood of recession. Before we go, we wanted to let you know that Friday marked 1 year since our colleague Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich was detained by Russian authorities while on a reporting trip and accused of espionage. Evan, the Journal, and the U.S. government vehemently deny the accusation, and the Biden administration has designated Evan as wrongfully detained. Russian courts have repeatedly rejected appeals by his lawyers and last week ordered Evan held in pretrial detention in a Moscow prison until June 30th. In a letter, our editor-in-chief Emma Tucker said Evan's detention is a blatant attack on the rights of the free press at a time when journalists are needed to bear witness to history. And that's everything you need to know to take on the week for Sunday, March 31st. The show is produced by Jess Jupiter. Jonathan Sanders is our booking producer. Michael Laval and Jessica Fenton are our sound designers. Michael also wrote our theme music. Melanie Roy is our supervising producer. Aisha Al-Muslim is our development producer. Scott Salloway and Chris Zinsley are the deputy editors. And Falana Patterson is the head of news audio for The Wall Street Journal. For even more, head to WSJ.com. I'm Dion Rabot. Stay smart.
Technology can make the world better. At UST, we're building a future where people everywhere are empowered to live better lives.
It's transformation you can feel.
And you don't have to do it alone.
We believe in the power of technology to transform businesses and build a better world.